Talk Show.
Recorded live.
Okay, this is William Fink, and this is the Christogenia Forum call, November 16th, 2009. And praise Yahweh. Hello, people. Hello, sword brethren. Oh, I unmuted them, and they're muted again. How did that happen? Hello.
Hello, Bill. How are you? Praise Yahweh.
Praise Yahweh. I unmuted you. I unmuted all, and I looked after I finished talking, and you were both muted again. Hello, Patricia.
Hey, Bill. Hey, Brian. How are you guys?
Hello, I'm well. Yourself?
Oh, good.
Are you calling in to talk to us, or are you just eavesdropping?
I'm more eavesdropping. We're in final edit mode, so I can't be online and stuff. We get too many people reading and writing.
Okay, real quick, I got to bug you about this. How's Wendy doing? Have you heard from her?
Oh, she's not doing good.
Well, Gerald said she was really sick. What's up with that?
Well, she, you know, going on the plane, what they do in Atlanta, when she came to see us, and when she got to Atlanta, they had a big flu shot kiosk going. So naturally, she marched right over and said to them, oh, you're giving the one with the mercury in it? And they said, gee, we don't know. she said, well, let's see the package insert. She goes, oh, we don't have one of those. But actually, they were just doing the flu mist, which is the one that's a live virus that viral sheds 21 days, which is just brilliant because you're going to give this to people and then put them on an airplane, and then they're going to viral shed the entire flight for 21 days after that, and everybody's immune system's compromised on the plane because there's not enough moisture.
Right, I would have taken a bus to Florida or a cab or anything, but not a plane.
Crazy. So I know that's why she's sick, and you know she's got stress at home and stuff. So, but she was desperate enough to actually go to Allopath today, which
I'm sorry, Patricia, you're cutting out.
Oh, sorry. Is this better? If I stand right here,
yes.
Okay. Yeah, she was really, really sick today. So hopefully, I've given her some recommendations to see if she can turn the corner here. But she's definitely got pneumonia. There's no question.
Well, please tell her that we were asking about her because I know you'll speak to her before I can get a chance to.
I will. Thank you so much. And you can unplug me. Oh, I got to tell you a really funny story that I worked on this week if anyone cares to listen. Dr. Oz, you know, the guy on Oprah. He's a health expert.
Well, I
don't. He has like a long list of credentials, including he was named a healer of the millennium by Healthy Living Magazine. That's a pretty big, you know, title to live up to. Healer
like
of the millennium.
Named Jesus Christ, isn't it? That's pretty blasphemous, I would think.
Yeah,
that
I thought
just
so.
Crazy.
Too. I know. Oh, well, crazy. Oh, yeah, these people are crazy.
You couldn't accept.
That's
a man
right.
Can't accept a title.
Oh,
like
shoot,
that.
My phone's dying. It won't hold the charge here. But anyway.
I guess her phone's dead.
I was going to say that.
I'm sorry, Patricia.
What's going on in the Ukraine right now is pneumonic plague.
Somebody spread an email around. I mean, I'm not saying that it's not good, but somebody spread an email around saying that there were a lot of there was a lot of aircraft, low flying aircraft activity over to Ukraine, and they were spewing out the chemtrails, and all of a sudden everybody's sick and dying.
And it's not swine flu. They've confirmed it beyond a shadow of a doubt that it is pneumonic plague. They're calling it super flu.
Super flu. That's just amazing. Explain pneumonic plague. I mean, I've heard of bubonic plague, but...
I'll read here. Pneumonic plague is one of the three main forms of plague, all of which are caused by the bacterium Yersinia pestis. It is more virulent and rare than bubonic plague. The differences between the plague is simply the location of the infection. Pneumonic plague is an infection in the lungs. Bubonic is an infection of the bubos or lymph nodes. Well, septicemic plague is an infection of the bloodstream. So pneumonic plague, it's has a much higher fatality rate. It's considerably more rare than bubonic plague, and it's a lot more contagious. It's easier to spread. One of the main signs, you'll be coughing up blood.
That sounds just wonderful.
Yeah, the one thing you don't want to do with that is take aspirin.
I have to go to town tomorrow. Should I wear like a spacesuit or something? I haven't been to town in 3 or 4 weeks. I have to go to a store and do some other business.
That's one of the reasons I like to just drive everywhere I go, since I don't have to sit next to anybody. No one sneezes on me. No one coughs on me. And when I get wherever I'm going, I have my own little survival kit on wheels in the form of my car and the contents of the trunk.
Well, you know, my whole thing about this is that it's not the pathogen, it's the terrain. That's what natural health consultants always say. You know, Louis Pasteur was wrong. As a matter of fact, he stole his research from another guy named Bechamp. And Bechamp said that it wasn't the pathogen. It was the unhealthy person that the pathogen changed in and became a pathogen when it was harmless to someone else. And I guess my point would be, say you're in an elevator with three other people. Somebody sneezes. One other person gets sick and two other people don't. Well, if Pasteur was right, everybody would have started sneezing and being sick. But it's not. It's the condition that your own body is in. And that's why these chemtrails in the food and things like that. And I'm saying that, you know, not to make people feel bad that they get sick, because none of us, it's almost nearly impossible in this environment that we live in to be healthy internally, because our food is so denatured and stripped of nutrients and whatnot.
Well, let me give you an example. And I learned this, it took me years to learn this. I worked out all the time in prison for 12 years. And I would work out harder in the winter, because there's something that happens to me in October that I'm always hungry. I mean, I don't know if it's like a bear going into hibernation or what, but I would gain 30 pounds between October and January every year. So I would work out harder, and I realized that when I worked out real hard, I would very often get the flu after a hard workout. And what I did was, the last 2 winters, I didn't do that, and I cut my workouts in half in the winter, and I didn't get sick at all.
I think when you have less vitamin D.
Well, I think it's because I stopped running myself down.
Well, that too. But the fact is, why October? You work yourself up in January.
I start eating in the fall. I'm telling you, it's like an uncontrollable urge to eat.
Well, I think it's because of you having less daylight. What I'm saying is, you're entering into a vitamin D deficiency, and your body's probably hungrier, trying to come up with more vitamin D or whatever that kicks that in, and you know.
Well, that might be true, but
I think it's related to the season, because it didn't affect you in May. I mean, you felt better in May.
Right, but the bottom line of what I'm trying to say is that when I didn't run myself down in the winter and exhaust myself, I didn't get sick.
Exactly. Well, marathon runners, they have chronic fatigue syndrome to beat the band. I mean, people that work out too much, it's a stress on your body, and it's not good for you. It's bad energetically for you. I mean, electrically, you're an electrical being. I mean, it's wrong to do that, and you pay the price.
Okay, it's just, I had to throw that observation in there.
Yeah.
I haven't been sick in a few years now. And yeah. I haven't taken a pill in at least 12 years. Even when I get sick, I wouldn't take a pill. And I'll tell you something, I get sick, I wouldn't even take an aspirin. I haven't even taken an aspirin, a vitamin, nothing. When I got sick and the other guys around me got sick, I did not recover, and they didn't recover any quicker than I did. The whole pill thing is I swear it's just garbage.
No, all that does is mask some of the symptoms, but it actually interferes with your body's natural healing mechanism.
I believe so. I honestly do.
Now, I believe in short-circuiting that. I take things that I know pump up my immunity and things like that, and I take them, and I'm going to continue to take them as long as I can.
Yeah,
I found that
they
work.
Cayenne pepper and garlic and stuff like that I cook.
Yeah. Yeah, I take, yeah, so, I mean,
and,
those
and
are
vegetables, of course.
Right.
Which are hard to come by. The there.
Well, listen, I'll let you guys talk. I just got to finish. Can I finish this story about Dr. Oz? It's hilarious.
Sure.
So the guy. So.
What was that title again? The Healer of the Millennium?
Healer of the Millennium.
Wow.
I mean, that's pretty big stuff.
Yeah.
Healthy Living Magazine.
Die.
That's yeah, pretty big
like
stuff.
Herod did, being eaten with worms.
Oh, he probably will be. He probably will be. But, I mean, this guy's a board-certified surgeon and all this kind of stuff. But as when you get on Oprah, I mean, that is like winning a lottery ticket because, I mean, you have a huge, huge network at your disposal at that point. And so they've given him the spinoff show, Dr. Oz, you know, so just like Dr. Phil.
Let me
actually
see if I'd rather be on Oprah or hang myself.
Yeah, really. I mean, it's a. I mean, that's a tough call.
I think I'd rather hang myself.
Yeah. I'll get if you get invited to Oprah, let me know. I'll send the rope. I mean, it's what I'd be doing you a favor. So he has this show that they a spinoff that they did called Dr. Oz. They launched it in September, and it was the biggest launch since Dr. Phil. I mean. I'm telling you, when Oprah puts her seal of approval on something, people tune in. So back in October, I want to say about October 28th, she decided that they had a show on Dr. Oz about getting the flu shot, the swine flu, and all this kind of stuff. And Sherry Tenpenny, who's of my, you know, understanding of things, she actually wrote a tremendous book called Foul.
Is she
really
an
good.
Indian?
No. Sherry Tenpenny she's a blonde. I mean, she's an Anglo-Saxon.
What's up with the name? Is that an English name?
Yeah, it must be an Tenpenny must be an English name.
It just sounds like some kind of wild, like a name an Indian would
have. I know. I'm dealing with Mark White Eagle right now. I know the Eagles. I know the Indian thing. So anyway, she really didn't want to go because she didn't expect a fair shake. But there, and they let her talk and this kind of stuff. They edited out all but one sentence that she said. All but one sentence.
Wow.
I mean, that was their fair and unbalanced reporting. Edited all out, and then they cut right to him with his sleeve rolled up getting the shot, which I don't think he really got. I think it's a saline shot myself. I really do. And so they wrote on, somebody dug up, Mike Adams from Natural News, dug up the fact that Dr. Oz owns stock in a biological, you know, company that develops vaccines.
Yeah, years ago they called that a conflict of interest.
Yeah, they still call it a conflict of interest. And that's what I would still call that. So he's
well, years ago
that,
people would actually resign their positions.
Over a conflict.
In
no, here he is promoting.
Situation.
Of course, he's going to say, well, they don't make the H1N1 vaccine. They don't make that one, so it's not a conflict. But he's promoting vaccines like they're the, you know, God's gift to the planet. And we all know that that's wrong.
Well, the bottom line
gets,
is that pharmaceuticals are unchristian. That's
yeah, I know. We all know that. But where it gets fun, Bill, is that his public relations firm calls up and very adamantly tells Mike Adams of Natural News that our client, we represent this technology company, SIGA Technology, we don't have anything to do with vaccines. He said, really? That's interesting because it says right on your website that you develop vaccines for the military and this, that, and the other. I mean, it got really funny. Well, they're making a fuss over nothing. All they had to do was shut up, and it would have blown over. But instead, they make this big fuss. So Mike Adams goes a step further. He Googles it, and in about 8 seconds, he finds all these other references to this country, this company being involved in vaccines. And then he gets on his Facebook group and says, hey, guys, you want to do a little investigative journalism? See if you can find vaccines associated with this. Oh, my gosh, they get their SEC listing where they mention vaccines 150 times. And then it gets even more fun because they reveal. Have you ever seen it online? When you're online, you see something called the real age test. Real age. What's your real age? Well, what that is, that's a marketing device by Big Pharma. And Dr. Oz's name is tied to that 6 ways to Sunday. And so what it is, when you fill that out.
What is an Oz? I'm sorry. What is an Oz?
Oh, Mehmet Oz. Mehmet.
Oh, so he's
a non-white.
He's from
Cleveland, Ohio, but obviously of Middle Eastern descent. Yeah. So,
Turkish. Yeah, Turkish is good.
Yeah, probably Turkish. So it gets better. So this real age test that he's got his name all over, well, that's all the big vaccine and pharmaceutical companies what fund this thing. That's who owns it. In that when you say, oh, yeah, do you want to be a member now? Oh, as soon as you click member, then they start bombarding you with ads based on whatever little defect that you told them that you were struggling with, like if you're a diabetic or you have, you know, restless leg syndrome or whatever nonsense, and then they start bombarding you with pharmaceutical ads. Is this fun or what?
I believe it. I mean, anything that like that on the Internet is just a sucker's game.
Well, here's a thing from your Wikipedia. According to Natural News, who hired private investigator Joseph Culligan, Dr. Mehmet Oz holds 150,000 option shares in SIGA Technologies, stock symbol SIGA, a vaccine company that could earn him millions of dollars in profits as the stock price rises. Dr. Oz is a huge promoter of vaccines and has been on television reinforcing fear about H1N1 swine flu, urging everyone to take the vaccine.
That's the article.
He purchased his option shares in SIGA for as little as $1.35 back in 2005 and purchased additional options in 2007, 2008, and 2009. The success of SIGA Technologies and therefore of his financial investment depends on the widespread adoption of vaccines.
But, you know, the thing is, you know, even if he sold all his options today, he came out with less than $200,000 profit, you know, which isn't a windfall. But it's based on the fact that those options don't expire till like 2019. And then by then, with all the new vaccines that they're trying to come up with, like they're trying to come up with a vaccine for cigarette smoking.
Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't they?
Why wouldn't they? Well, I mean,
how would a vaccine stop you from smoking?
I know. It's insanity.
When I had my first cigarette, I was like about maybe 11 years old. And I coughed my head off and still tried to smoke another one.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's the crazy thing. And see, Sword Brother was able to come up with that article in what did that take you, 30 seconds?
Less than that, right?
Maybe 10. And so everybody else came up with a million. That article that the private investor came, oh, it's just hilarious. It's absolutely hilarious. So I just
look at Guy's picture. He looks like he has significant Jewish ancestry.
Well, he's a Turk. And they're all, you know, basically from the same sewer. There's no doubt. I mean, the Khazar, the Edomite Khazar Turkish trading empire that was basically like you can't say a global trading empire, but it took up a large swath of the world for several hundred years. And they all intermingled and they all I mean a lot of Jews probably have the Turks are actually they began as the Uyghur people in China and migrated west and the further west they got the whiter looking they got because they would
intermarry.
Yeah, they would intermarry, but yeah. Quite often it wasn't voluntary.
No.
and they conquered when they conquered Syria was all white. And most of Mesopotamia was actually all white, and Persia, and I mean, you had an Arab influx a couple of hundred years before that, but they destroyed a lot of white blood, especially when they got to the Byzantine Empire, when they crossed the Euphrates.
The lesson we should take away from this is that our people are only able to maintain their racial purity if they can maintain the territorial integrity of their various nations.
Right, and this... Yeah, territorial integrity is extremely violated right now.
Well, it's like that video that you had on the forum, Bill. Like no culture has ever survived this low a birth rate.
Right, absolutely not.
Yeah,
and that's true. I didn't like the conclusion the video drew, but I didn't care about it. I wanted to present the data that the video presented was fine.
Yeah, well, this guy is another big liar. I mean, all the news that's been coming out is there was a woman in Canada, in Quebec, who got the H1N1 vaccine and died 2 days later. And the news reports, right in the article, that she died from complications of the swine flu. Not the vaccine. No, she died from the vaccine. Anybody with eyes can read that and see she died from the vaccine. And women, there's been just a slew of miscarriages. Women that were all in a birth club to give birth in June all had abortions, I mean, spontaneous abortions right after the swine flu. Some as early as the same evening that they got the shot, others within 4 days having miscarriages. And then in women that are in their last trimester, there's four from one small town in South Dakota, four, you know, got the swine flu altogether, swine flu vaccine, and they're all having preterm contractions. I mean, it's like shocking. You know, I don't know what a person would think. You know, why would you inject yourself with mercury when you're pregnant? I just don't get it.
No one's doing anything about it. I imagine a century ago, the men in the town would go after those doctors and hold them accountable for what's been done to their wives.
Oh, well, the doctors all say, oh, no, it's just a coincidence.
It's just,
in the infants that survive that kind of an assault on their health with those kind of toxins, I mean, they're never going to be right. They are never going to be healthy children, ever. It's a total assault against us.
Well, I just found something out. My cousin, he's about 49 and dying of cancer, and he's been retarded his whole life. When he went in for his cancer treatments, they finally diagnosed him with autism and said that he's had it his whole life, but they're at a loss to explain how he got autism.
Well, here, I can explain it for you.
And
if he was that way at birth, he got it from the mother's amalgam fillings. It passes through the placenta. That mercury goes through the placenta into the blood-brain barrier and passes the blood-brain barrier in the child. And that's how children are born autistic. That is one of the primary ways that they get autism, before the vaccines. And then they generally take those children and continue to vaccinate them and make the situation worse.
Their conclusion was likely that the umbilical cord was wrapped around his throat.
Bull.
I don't think that would cause autism. I thought that would just cause severe brain damage and physical damage.
Exactly, not autism. No, it's from the mother's amalgam. And you know, and if she went to the if she went to a dentist while she was pregnant and they drilled on her or cleaned her teeth, huge, it's like setting off a mercury hurricane. And she and the fetus is exposed to that.
But despite, you know, having an IQ of probably 70 to 80, and, you know, essentially being retarded his whole life, he's never liked blacks. I saw him once walking around downtown in my dad's hometown, and he had a Mauser rifle slung over his back. And I asked him what he was doing. He said he just bought a rifle at a gun store, and he wanted to go through Cleveland and start shooting jigs.
Wait a minute. What, they sell rifles to people that are autistic or retarded?
Well, all the gun dealers in town know him, so they don't really care. Since he's never violated any laws, and he qualifies, and the sheriff even signed off on his curio and relic permit, so he gets stuff shipped right to his door.
Wonderful. Well, I'm sorry that he's sick. Is he looking into alternative means? Is the family looking into alternative means to recover him?
They said the prognosis is not good. He has lymphatic cancer, and it's pretty well advanced.
Well, I mean, there's bunches of different things that all work. Even with fourth stage. So email me sometime if you want me to send you a lead on some of them. Not all of them are expensive.
All right.
I mean, there's some that are really simple.
If you want, I'll email you after the show.
Okay, great. Listen, I'm going to let you guys go. I'm going to go back to reading, and no arithmetic. I just want to call in and say hi, and Yah bless.
Thank you. Yah bless.
Bye.
South Carolina, how you doing?
Oh, hey.
How's it going?
Am I on?
Yeah, you just listening?
Oh, yeah. I was just using this to listen. This is the robber, the Avenger.
Yeah, I figured. How you doing?
I'm fine.
All right.
I'm as enslaved as ever by the Empire.
Yeah, well, that's all of us. That's unavoidable.
But my health is good, considering that my mother has a cat now, and I'm allergic to cats.
Wonderful.
So isn't that lovely? So I think I'm going to have to divorce my mother until the cat dies.
How about having your mother divorce the cat?
I mean, this cat allergy is serious. I mean, I my lungs just fill up with fluid, and it turns to blood after a while. I think it could actually kill me.
Wow, that doesn't sound good at all.
I mean, think about it, if you put a little baby that was allergic to cats in a house full of cats, it would kill the baby.
Yeah, I don't know if cats are actually the ideal pet. I don't know.
Other than that, go ahead with the show. I'm not sure.
Okay,
thanks.
Y'all bless. Take care.
Okay.
Not all cats are bad.
My son's a big cat lover, too, Gerald. I think he has three of them.
Jocko would take offense to that. Although I have known people that were seriously allergic to cats, and my heart goes out to them because it can be very, very serious.
I'm sure it can be.
Well, I'd like to point out that studies have consistently shown that the mere presence of a cat inside a dwelling generally keeps rats and mice away. If they even smell or detect any signs of the presence of a cat, they will avoid a building entirely. And anything a cat might do to somebody, which I think are just old wives' tales anyway, is certainly dwarfed by the diseases rats carry. Rats will actually attack infants, they'll chew people up, and they bring all sorts of disease with them.
Well, you know, I don't doubt that cats don't have a benefit in a country home like where I live. We have a cat next door, and it kills a lot of the mice. But I don't know if they really belong in the house. I mean, I don't know. That's arguable. It's arguable about dogs, too. That's the way it is. I was never particularly fond of cats, so I'm just an anti-cat type person. Just call me the anti-cat. I don't know what to tell you.
Well, my afternoon was kind of disrupted. I have felt very bad this afternoon. I saw on Fox News, Fair and Balanced, that there's a pig farm out there where they're brutalizing pigs, and I was just heartbroken when I read that.
You know, in Egypt, they've
killed
every...
Yeah, I can never brutalize an animal is ridiculous. But if your cat weighs 50 pounds more, I bet he'd brutalize you. You ever see a cat play with a mouse? I want
they're very cruel. They tantalize them for a long period of time before they actually kill them.
Exactly. Cats are cruel. They want to be entertained by their prey. And if Jocko was 80 pounds, Gerald, I think you might be cat bait.
Well, luckily he's not. He is a big cat, but he's tame. He didn't hurt Brian, so I guess he's okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I had an uncle that always had 10, 12 cats in the house, and I could never stand it. And that's probably why I'm turned off about cats. But if I'm over a friend's house and they have a cat, I would pet the cat. I don't. But cats are very obnoxious and independent and arrogant.
I was teasing about being upset over the pigs being brutalized. I could really care less about pigs, but that was an actual article.
Well, I mean, it's senseless brutalizing. You have to have some kind of sickness. Some kind of diseased person would brutalize helpless.
I've noticed typically Jews seem to hate pets. They despise cats and dogs, and they mistreat animals, strays, and such.
They should love pigs.
I don't think Jews particularly care about any living entity, whether it's human or animal.
Not unless they could rent it out.
And one thing right now, they are in the process of killing every single pig in Egypt, if they have not already completed it, to combat the possibility of swine flu. I wonder if that's going to, if there will be future studies that show an increase in the health of their population due to better food, since they now won't have to eat pigs, they'll go to chickens or something.
I thought it was mostly the Christians in Egypt that had the pig farms.
Yes, the Coptic Christians.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd call them Christians, but yeah, the Coptic.
Or we'll just call them the non-Muslim infidel.
Yeah, the non-Muslim, the infidel Egyptians. Pretty defensive of that word, Christian. And we should be. So what's going on today? What's happening in the news? I haven't listened to the news. I'm shut off from it. I did hear this. I heard that Obama bowed down to the Japanese emperor or prime minister or something. You know, he's basically prostrating himself all over the planet.
So who hasn't he bowed down to?
And I heard that the and actually, who was telling me about this? Was my son telling me about this or my mother? I forget. I'm brain dead. My son was telling me about this on the telephone, I think. There was a conservative commentator that criticized him for it, and the liberal media is ganging up on him. It's crazy.
The commentator called him treasonous.
Yeah, it is treasonous.
Everybody bows over there. It's like shaking hands. It's nothing.
Well, he's still shaking hands, but they're not bowing to him.
I saw the YouTube video of him bowing down to the Saudi Arabian sheikh, and that was not like shaking hands. That was like kissing his ass.
Right here, it looks like Obama's bowing down so low he's about ready to kiss this guy's feet.
And bowing, you know, it's our culture that counts. That's as far as I'm concerned. And this country was built on the precept that all men were created equal, meaning that no men were nobility. No men deserve to be nobility and elevated over another man. That's what Jefferson meant by that statement.
And a true statesman would never prostrate himself before a king, let alone a non-white monarch.
Well, right.
But, I mean, the days of Andrew Jackson and Thomas Jefferson are over. Now we have Mobutu Sese Seko and Idi Amin and their modern protege, Barack Hussein Obama.
Yeah, well, that's what it boils down to. But I just wanted to, what Obama does isn't the important thing to me, but to illustrate how the Marxist media just, a Marxist can do no wrong in the eyes of the Marxist media.
You know, I can remember when the United States flag was never dipped before any other country. And I hear several years ago at the Olympics, the first time they dipped the American flag. And I was just embarrassed to see that.
Yeah, well, of course.
I don't like my American flag.
What'd you say, Robert?
My American flag is the Confederate.
Oh, you're after my own heart. I fly a Confederate flag on my 25-foot flagpole out front every day.
So what you mean is the U.S. Empire flag.
Yeah, that's what it boils down to.
I normally fly a Republic of South Africa flag.
I'm sure nobody recognizes it in Ohio.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Hard to tell you.
Although the day Obama got elected, I flew the Confederate flag outside, so I'm sure everyone got the message.
I try not to fly a flag at all.
I'd like to talk about something or ask about a certain topic.
Well, this is just just a hangout call. It's not really, I don't want to do a steady program, but I thought I would give everybody the opportunity to get together and this is time to ask about something.
Well, I just want to say, have you guys noticed the utter hatred and prejudice that the average white American has for the Muslims? I mean, I don't particularly like Muslims, and I don't really want them living in my neighborhood or in my state, or even in America, but they have been sold down the river by these Jews that these Muslims are our enemies.
Well, let me say something first, and you know, you're right. I don't buy the mainstream propaganda, but from a historical viewpoint, you know, the Jews wanted to destroy Christian Spain, and they went to Africa and got the Muslims, and the Muslims were more than willing to destroy Christian Spain for the Jews. The Jews brought the Moors into Spain. And the Moors would have been in Britain if it weren't for the French. If it wasn't for Charles Martel, the Moors would have been in Britain and in Hamburg and in the Rhineland. But Charles Martel stopped them at Tours. Now,
so you're saying this has been going on for a long time?
Absolutely. And people don't know anything about history.
I agree. It obviously it has. But, I mean, how do we deal with this problem? Because
how do we deal with it? Why do Christians embrace the Jews, and why do we enrich the Jews?
We don't have that perception that they're our enemy. We have a different enemy.
Well, Muslims and Jews alike are our enemy. If you're not a white Christian, you're my enemy.
If you look at 9/11 and all the
wars, Jews pulled off 9/11.
Exactly.
The Muslims didn't do 9/11. The Jews did. The Muslims were used as patsies.
Well, they found some of those so-called Muslim hijackers are still alive. I believe several are in Egypt. Several have been identified in Morocco. And one is even working at an airport on the east coast of the United States, I believe in Boston or Baltimore.
But, you know, these Muslims, they're not immigrating into white lands to be our friends. They're immigrating as part of a holy war to destroy Christendom. And we're told that Islam is a religion of peace. Yes, Islam is a religion of peace. When everybody bows to Islam, it's peaceful. That's their idea. And we believe the Jew media is using us against the Muslims in the Middle East, and then they're flooding our country with Muslims at home. Don't you see the dichotomy? Don't you see the cognitive dissonance in that?
I mean, we see that, Bill, but, I mean, you know about Khalid
saying is the Muslims are not my friends, they're my enemies. The enemies of my enemies are not my friends. The enemies of the Jews are not my friends. They can the Muslims can never be my ally.
We have no common ground with them because as we're fighting the Jews, say we were fighting the Jews together and now the Jews are vanquished, are we just going to ask the friends that we spent 5 years or 10 years fighting a war with, oh, by the way, please pick up and leave our lands because we want to maintain our religion, our culture, and our blood pure, and you can't do that if we can't do that if you're here? There's no common ground with them. And these same people we're fighting alongside in Afghanistan, they're flooding our streets with opium and heroin.
Look at it. Okay. If it wasn't for the Serbs in the 14th century, we'd all be speaking Islam right now. Well, we'd all be speaking Arabic. Charles Martel stopped them in France, and the Serbs stopped them in Kosovo. And look at how we repaid the Serbs for that. In the 14th century at Kosovo, the Serbs saved Western civilization.
Well, let me say this. The point I'm making, I'm not trying to say we should go out and make allies with Muslims or Arabs or any of those people, but should we let these Jews get away with lying to our people like they're doing?
Well, of course we shouldn't, but we can't run into the arms of the enemy, into the arms of another enemy. We can't do it.
Not under the arms of them, but we could at least say they are not the perpetrators of all this terrorism.
They're pawns that have been used by the Jews.
And fundamentally,
that's true. But they're also our enemies. They're also bastards. They're half-breeds.
They're fundamentally alien.
Anathema. They're alien to us.
I mean, this is an opportunity to me to expose the real liars and the real evil.
Well, the Jew, you know what?
If
a Jew's moving his lips, he's lying. There's no doubt. But Christians should understand that just by reading the New Testament.
Well, unless we point it out to them, they will continue to be in the dark. They need us to point out these liars.
Well, you know, everything I do is about pointing out the liars. That's what I work for 24/7.
We're doing that now.
I got 8 websites to try to point out the liars. You know, what can I do?
I think we're doing a good job. I think we're doing well enough
without working with the Muslims.
Right. I'll never work with the Muslims, period.
No, I'm not saying that.
I'm never going to embrace a Muslim. He's my enemy, too. That's the way it is. I've read enough of the Quran to know what they mean when they talk about acknowledging Christ, and they don't mean anything like what a Christian means. And I know enough about their Sharia law and their holy war against Christendom, and it's been going on for 2,000 years. And the Muslims are actually
the street
and you see somebody being beat up and you don't do anything about it, then a few weeks later, you're walking down the street and they're going to beat you up too.
Whoa. I lived this all my life. If I walk down the street, I see a white man getting beat up, I'm going to do something about it. If he ain't white, it's none of my concern. That's just the way it is.
Well, I can empathize with that, Bill. I'm just trying to say it eventually will come to us as well. If we do not stop what they're doing to these Muslims, they will eventually do it to us. Because
Why do you think the Jew talks out of two sides of his mouth? Out of one side of his mouth, he says that the Muslims in the Middle East are evil and we have to destroy them. And out of the other side of his mouth, we have to let them flood the country. Both sides of his mouth are speaking evil.
I don't think they care who floods the country as long as they're not white. And there's not a whole lot else out there, but not white.
There's a ton of YouTubes on what's happening in Britain right now, and the Jew politicians are behind it.
I mean, they need useful idiots to run the empire, to supply the labor.
The Jews and the Muslims got along fine for 2,000 years or whatever, 1,500 years. That they only had this disagreement, and it's to me a family spat over 90 miles of desert in Palestine, maybe 2,700 square miles of desert in Palestine. It's a family spat, but the Jews and the Muslims got along fine in North Africa after the white civilization there was destroyed. The Jews and the Muslims got along fine in the Iberian Peninsula after the white civilization there was destroyed. The Jews and the Muslims got along just swell 1,500 years ago in Syria. They got along just swell in Anatolia after the Muslim Turks destroyed Anatolia, the white civilization there. The Jews opened the gates to the Turks and the Mongols in the cities of Eastern Europe to destroy white civilization.
And since World War II,
and the Muslims worked together with the Jews for 1,500 years.
Brothers and sisters, they have fooled the white people into believing this Jewish Israel.
Right, but we can't run into the arms of the enemy. We just can't do it.
I'm not suggesting to run the arms of the enemy.
I'll never move to help or assist or support a Muslim. That's the way it is. They're evil.
They're Antichrist too. We should have love of the truth, and there's no truth in this terrorism.
Well, of course there's not. There's no truth. There's nothing good about imperialism. It's not the fact that our armed forces are overseas fighting in the Middle East that's wrong. It's the fact that our armed forces are overseas fighting anywhere except in the defense of white people, that's wrong. Do you understand that? It's not just the imperialism in the Middle East that's wrong. It's imperialism that's wrong, period. Because all imperialism is the employment of our citizens in defense of the Jew bankers on Wall Street and their interests. That's all imperialism is.
Right.
It's a public army serving private interests. That's all it is.
As a white man, I go out my day-to-day walk, and I'm around other white people, and they're Judeo-Christians, and they are stacking their chips up in a certain place, and I run into this all the time. I went to a meeting, and somebody told me that in Afghanistan they have not just caves, but they have underground military complexes. And, you know, they believe that this Osama bin Laden has Department of Defense-style underground cities. You know, that just goes to show you how ridiculous this goes.
Well, it doesn't matter to me what he has and what he doesn't have. The imperialism is wrong, period. And people have to be taught the root of the problem. And in order to do that, you have to get to the root of the problem.
Well, that's what, well, okay, this is the dilemma. You can't present them with the root of the problem until you show that the liars are lying to them and how and where they're doing it.
Well, I have a question, Avenger. How would working with the Muslims help facilitate for that? Since, as I see it, I find myself in agreement with Bill. Basically, we are being used as whores for the Jew to go into the Muslim lands, kill them, wreck their countries, and thereby they want to get out of those countries, and they come into our countries with the refugee crisis, and the Jew pushes through legislation to open our borders and allow them in, and at the same time they come with the hatred because we wrecked their country. The only person that wins is the Jew, but working with the Muslim won't help prevent that situation.
You're probably getting lost in the details, but try to look at the big picture here. I mean, the terrorism is the big grand prize that the Jews have over America or the United States right now. And these terrorism trials are the biggest news, and they're the biggest lie.
Well, what you got to do is you got to go to 9/11, go to 9/11missinglinks.com and watch that. And if you want to do something about it, you make yourself copies of that video and you give it out to people. That's what you do.
Well, I don't think you should hit them up too much with, you know, give children a big piece of meat that they can't chew up. You got to chip away at it.
Well, you know something? They either recognize that there's a problem or they don't. If they don't recognize there's a problem, then Yahweh hasn't opened their eyes. And they're euthanized by the mainstream media, and they're probably not worth saving anyway. That's the bottom line. The people aren't going to wake up until the time comes, and when the time comes, they're going to wake up. That's the bottom line.
I agree.
We don't have a political solution. All we can hope to do is pull a brother out of the fire, and that has to be done on an individual basis. I mean, I don't have a magic carrot. I just don't. I'm sorry. Maybe somebody else smarter than me does. I don't have one.
Well,
Bill, if we had
they're going to turn on us, too. If we admit that we are not for the Zionist Jews.
Well, isn't that what it's supposed to be in the end time?
Yeah.
Why are you resisting the scripture? We can't help it. That's the way it's supposed to be, brother against brother and father against son, and that's the way it's supposed to be. And if you have any of your family members, you're blessed.
Right.
That's the way
that's
it's supposed
Yahweh's
to be.
Will, so be it. But I'm not thinking of myself. I'm thinking of...
Well, I understand that. I understand that. But, you know, you have to... We have to work by taking off small chunks. We ain't going to make it with the big bite. It's not going to work. It's not going to fly. There's not awareness. I mean, people are starting to wake up.
Yeah.
Definitely a way. I mean, most of the people in this forum came into identity within the last 15 years. And most of the people I've met in identity since I got out came into identity since 9/11, because they were looking for the answers to what happened on 9/11, and they were led to identity.
Right.
There is an awakening going on. More and more people are becoming disenchanted. People don't wake up until most people don't wake up until they're disenchanted. That's from my personal experience.
So you don't pay any attention to this trial, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and all that?
I don't pay any attention to the media at all. Take your television and throw it out the damn window.
Well,
and you'll be a lot better off.
We'll change the topic if you don't mind. There was a black woman cut in line in a Walmart in Missouri, and some whites got mad. A fight got started. She wouldn't settle down. When they asked her to leave, the police arrested her.
I'm surprised the police didn't arrest all the white people. I'm
yeah.
surprised they didn't let her go and lock up all the white people.
That's something new in the news.
Picking on that poor nigger.
Well, that's just the way they behave. They like to cut in front of the line, and they're real arrogant and
I hate
rude.
To tell you how many times I faced them off in prison for cutting in front of me in line. I go cut in front of all six of them.
Yeah. They make you wait. Real cocky attitudes.
The arrest report said she assaulted a police officer.
Well, I'm surprised you didn't let her go and lock up every white person there.
If you do anything in Walmart, it's all on camera.
Was that the story where they charged racism?
Right.
That was on the news. I saw that on Fox News.
Well, that's the way it is. They cry racism. Every single time a nigger stubs his toe, they cry racism. It's a racist couch that he tripped over. A white man made that couch.
Well, you know, right after Katrina, when Katrina was going on, and all of these nice black people from New Orleans was moving all up here and everywhere in the shelters, in Shreveport, in the huge dome they have, they took in lots and lots of these people, and they couldn't get the beds, cots out fast enough, and so these blacks were yelling discrimination and racism because they wasn't getting a big enough handout quick enough from the people that were helping them.
Well, you know, every time they cry racism, we react, the media reacts. It's like a bunch of trained rats running around chasing each other's tails, and they get such good results every time they cry racism. Why not keep doing it?
When's it going to get old?
It comes from communism. Racism
is
the communist book.
Ancient Marxist Jewish Bolshevik tactic, no doubt.
As well as feminism.
Yeah, well, Sword Brother and I, we're going to be discussing that in the next couple of weeks. I mean, when we get to talk about the Frankfurt School and the ill effects they had on American culture.
Yeah, you can't go over communism enough, really. I think that's a really good lead-in to the average person. Even though most people don't know what communism really is now.
The average person is a pig feeding at the Zionist trough.
And the average person is practicing communism without even knowing it.
Well, capitalism is the same the tool they use from above with their money, and then communism with the mobs, the niggers, and the devils in flesh will run in the streets.
Right. Marxism and Bolshevism and global international capitalism all point in the same direction.
Yes, sir.
Right.
Hitler knew it. Hitler wrote it in Mein Kampf over and over again. We're going to get to that soon, too. We can only do so much in an hour and a half a week.
It's kind of like the word politics. It's, you got the parasites, the ticks on the pole where they'll cast their seed. They call it vote, but I think they're throwing away their seed by ignoring their racial identity. They prey on our heritage and the genes of the line of Christ, right?
Well, of course they do.
Because they know
it's their goal to destroy the white man in the world. That's their goal.
And they know that
their actions prove it. History proves it.
They know that their God is Satan, is the devil. It's their very nature.
Yes, Channing Christian was a sad case, and that's, I'm just disgusted over it. It's incredible. But there's 10,000 Channing Christians in this country every year.
At least.
Kind of like Abe Foxman putting a parrot on a stick and getting him to repeat anti-Semite over and over.
Yeah, it's incredible. The hypocrisy in the media is incredible, but people just keep buying those newspapers and they keep turning that television on. If every white man tomorrow threw his television in the garbage, Babylon would fall.
Praise Yahweh.
Let it fall immediately.
Yeah. I was just in a truck stop having dinner, and there were 9 white truckers sitting around. I brought up the race card with them.
Was that a Klan meeting?
No, I wish it was. But they were talking. What they do is they just go to sleep, and they're talking about BS, about things that don't matter. And anyways, I was talking about the Jew, Rahm Emanuel Patronus, little Negro puppet there. About the Jew media, they had the little screaming demon up there blaring, and they were calling me a racist and a hater. This is right in a restaurant here, with white men sitting around. Ancestry, and the guy says, "You don't even know where you come from." And I was asking him, "What's your racial background?" "Well, German and Irish," and that's what he said. I said, "Oh, did you know that the Germans were called Scythians? They were white people that migrated from down south, where our race used to inhabit those areas."
Yeah, Mesopotamia.
Yeah. And, but boy, they pull those Jew rabbits out of their hat, Bill. Like, this one lady I was talking to, who's a Judeo-Christian, was telling me, "Oh, yeah, I'm a Negro." I was pointing out all those things that you had said. So I'm going to burn me hundreds of copies of your talks to start him. Oh, I think that's good.
Well, it's quaint. I'm humbled by that. Thank you.
Well, people have to be willing to listen, and I think most people, they're not willing to listen to anything that challenges their preconceived notions.
It's hard. You really have to hit them with something. You never know what's going to click with each individual, and with some individuals, or with most individuals, nothing's going to click. A person has to have a certain awakeness within his inner self that resonates when you say the right thing. And if a person doesn't have that, then he's not called to wake up. That's just the way it is.
Oh, yeah.
They need to hunger for answers and realize that they're not getting those answers from the mainstream media or from mainstream sources.
And at times in my life, talking to people about identity and the truth about the Jews and all that, I have actually had success with some of the most unlikely people. And then with people that I thought should be able to understand me, and I struck out. It's
oh, yeah.
The way it is. You never know. You can't stop trying, but you never know. That's just the way it is.
Yeah. Yahweh looks at the recesses and the deeper parts of the heart, where the water goes in between the stones and everything.
A great tool, there's a few pamphlets that there's a little E. Raymond Calf booklet, Abrahamic Covenant. It costs $2 or $3 from artisanpublishers.com and Kingdom Identity Ministries also sells it. That little blue book, it's a little blue booklet. It's about half the size of it's like 4.5 inches high and maybe 3 inches wide. And 50 pages thick, and it's like a half-hour read for the average person. And that thing is great. And Clifton Emmaheiser, every essay on my website and every essay on Clifton Emmaheiser's website is available from Clifton Emmaheiser in a pamphlet format. It's just a one piece of paper folded up handout, just like a little pamphlet. And that's a great tool, and Clifton has some excellent introductory pamphlets like They're Your Children, Do You Care? The Three Tribes of Judah, off the top of my head. I mean, there's a ton of them. Should Christians Embrace the Jews, which I wrote. And anybody who writes or calls Clifton, I mean, his contact information is right on his website. And for, he'll sell 8 of those pamphlets for a quarter or whatever it is. I don't know. It's He just charges enough to cover his costs, and he probably doesn't even do that. And he'll sell you a couple hundred pamphlets for, I don't know, $10, $20 maybe, and they're great handouts and things to leave around places. I always throw a couple in my pocket and leave them at Walmart or the supermarket just to see who might find them. But yeah, they're great handouts and they're cheap.
Oh, okay. And that Kingdom Identity page, it's called kingdomidentity.com.
I'm sorry, I'm guilty of not knowing. I think it's king/identity or king-identity.com, but
I'll find it. Yeah.
Well, I know he's linked on Eli's site on the links page.
Oh. Thanks.
Bill.
Yes.
I was going to say about the television or Talmud vision. Even if you didn't have one at home, they're everywhere now. They're at the banks. They're at the doctor's offices, the restaurants. Everywhere you go, they've got this screaming at you.
Well, I understand that, but I don't go anywhere, so I don't care. I don't, you know what? I mean, I do understand it. We were in a restaurant back last year. I was in a restaurant with my parents late last year when I first got home, and we went to it, and they just had the TV blast. It was terrible.
My wife's, where she works, there's one in the break room that played all day on the...
Right, but that don't mean you have to pay it any mind. That don't mean you have to watch it. Most Americans get everything they think they know comes from CNN or TV shows or ABC News or 60 Minutes. They don't know anything except what the Jews that own those companies want them to know. That's the bottom line. And it's a damn shame.
Yeah, they got these porn shops and gambling casinos all over, too, but that doesn't mean you got to go.
Right. Well. That's exactly right. You don't have to partake. I think Les gave me the URL for Kingdom Identity. It's just kingidentity.com. www.kingidentity, all one word, .com. Thank you, Les.
I mean, it is getting where it's so disgusting to go anywhere in public. Can hardly stand it when you know the truth of the matter. But we can't retreat. I don't think we should go off into the woods and... that was my idea when I was young. A young man was
getting out of Babylon is not a matter of running off into the woods. No, it's not. But I mean, it's going to be awfully hard for if Babylon falls. It's going to be awfully hard for people in the big cities to defend themselves. I'll tell you that. I mean, it's kind of being like a kamikaze, being in a New York or a Pittsburgh or a Philadelphia.
Yeah, but in the same way, that's our opportunity, if this system fails, to take it back.
It's already built.
We'll never take it back as long as they have it in place.
Well, you know, nobody can determine what the vehicle is that's going to be employed. And Scripture doesn't tell us, but Yahweh tells us that He will cleanse our land. He will destroy our enemy. It's over and over again in all the end time prophecies. That's a major theme. And whatever the vehicle is, it is. And you'll know what it is when the time comes. But we can't know nothing until that time.
I mean, it's good to have an escape, somewhere to go, maybe temporarily. Like Francis Mayer, and he hid out in the swamp. And he'd come back and fight the British whenever they make themselves known. And
yeah,
go back
well, I mean, I'm familiar with all the tactical ploys, and that doesn't mean that we'll be able to use them when the
back in Back in his day, though, probably half the country was a swamp or a forest.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There was no roads then, but, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's exactly it.
That's how Herman defeated Varys. He hid out in the forest and coaxed him into the forest. But that's, you know, tactical ploys aren't where you place my stock, and they're pretty easy to come up with when you have to.
I perceive the people are so afraid of the government, and the men, for the most part, are so feminized, there will not be any resistance and at all, and people will be desperate looking for a leader.
Well, you know, the Jewish destruction of our culture began in 1910, and there was no resistance. And there was no resistance in the 1920s. Everybody was partying with Satan. And in
right,
the 1930s, everybody was starved and out of work, but there was no real resistance.
Yeah,
and then when the Jew wanted us to enlist up and go destroy our brethren in Germany, everybody signed up. And in the 1950s, when they started niggerizing our culture, everybody loved it. Everybody was partying with the devil. And in the 1960s, when all our women were just taught to rip their clothes off whenever a Jew wanted some or a beast or whoever, they just all went along with it. There was no resistance. And on and on and on until we get to where we are today, eh?
Well,
and the men, I'm not saying the women are whores. The men are whores just as much. But for 100 years in the destruction of Christendom, there's been no resistance. That there are a few voices in the wilderness, but most men just go along with it. And you're right. Now they're total fops. I mean, they dye their hair and they get Botox treatments and they're a bunch of, it's a sissy ass society. I talk about it all the time. You don't have to tell me, but there's no resistance. And there was no resistance 100 years ago.
Well, the system wasn't in debt like it is now, 100 years ago.
They passed the Federal Reserve Act. There was no resistance.
Right. Well, it didn't matter too much to people that they did that then. But now, if this Federal Reserve note goes completely worthless, you know, they won't be able to recover.
Well, basically, you know, Revelation 17:17 says that Yahweh would make them all of one mind and hand their kingdom over to the beast. So now you know why there was no resistance. But this
right.
is, I mean, all punishments from God are punishments for our disobedience. We can't blame God.
I believe if their system fails, they'll flee.
To where?
China. They're all lined up for it.
I mean, they don't stay around. They always
just
you
know,
like vagabonds.
I know record numbers of American Jews are heading to China, but do they really believe that the Chinese are just going to hand their government and their country and their culture over to them?
No. Well, they could go to Argentina or South America or...
No, I would bank on the fact that they think the Chinese are stupid enough about history, too, that they won't understand what's going on, and that's probably about right.
Well, maybe they'll get them to believe that they're the chosen race like they're trying to get the Japanese to.
Yeah.
But I imagine if they go to South America, they'd have to realize that we will pursue them there.
Well, you know, when Babylon falls, it's the end of the Jew. And that's that. There's no fleeing anywhere. You don't hide from the wrath of God.
They'll never get going again like they've done.
In fact, doesn't it say that they will beg the mountains to fall on them and hide them from the wrath of the one who sits on the throne?
Basically.
And that's not going to work out for them.
No.
I believe they'll be found out eventually. Their lies will be found out.
Well, they are building bunkers now. Some of the bunkers they're building are probably a quarter mile down, but I imagine that they don't know it. They're just building their tombs, aren't they?
Yeah, we'll just cap those off and shut them in there. That's fine.
There will be nowhere for them, though.
You fill them full of water. You know? I'm not going underground. I've heard some people say that build an underground bunker and survive the Holocaust or the bomb, nuclear Holocaust. And I said, no, I'm gonna live my final days above ground. I'm not going underground.
We can find the Jew bunkers and pump gas inside. The gas.
Yeah, I've heard they're up in Maryland or somewhere up there. They've got some underground hideouts for the bureaucrats and the politicians and the rulers.
They have a huge complex in West Virginia.
Yeah.
A lot of tricks. I'll deliver frozen food to these huge underground cave complexes where I drive this 18-wheel semi through these huge underground caves. And they have huge storegrounds underground.
Yeah, that can be found out because there's a trail going in and out of them, like those little prairie dogs. Find their trails easy. They have to have water and electricity.
I don't think any of that matters. I think that when the time comes, all the defenses that they present them are vain. It's all vanity. All the devices that the so-called Illuminati will use just can't possibly prevail.
Well, Bill, you know, just as Revelation poses the question that the masses will wonder who can make war with the beast, the real question is who can make war with Yahweh. The Jews ought to realize that, and they ought to know that they lose before it even begins. They're finished.
Absolutely.
I mean, what do they think? They're going to march out with 1,000 battalions and millions of tanks and helicopter gunships and try and challenge an army of angels led by the Messiah? He's going to laugh at them.
I think that they really build those things to so that they could pilfer contractor dollars and take care of their friends with contracts and things like that, because there's no real purpose to them. There's no real purpose to any of those defenses. I mean, you might think, oh, they're huge and they're powerful and they have this and they have that, but you can't live in there forever. And if the defense is against thermonuclear war, well, the fallout lasts 200 years. The land's uninhabitable. So what are they going to do when they run out of food? Eventually, they'll have to. It's all that is vain.
I have a question.
And it's all just a huge waste of taxpayer money. And that's what the Jews like to do most, is create circumstances by which they could put us into deeper debt.
So I have a question.
What's up, General?
When Yahshua comes, do you think that the Jews will have to endure trials, or do you think
General,
it's just going to be toast at that point?
No, Joe, the lake of fire means permanent destruction. That's what the lake of fire
means. But before they go into the lake of fire, is what
it's metaphorical for permanent destruction.
Mm-hmm.
Yahshua Christ will destroy them with the breath of his mouth, as Paul says.
So
there's no burning in hell for eternity. It means permanent destruction. It's a metaphor. It's a symbolic metaphor.
So you're saying that they will effectively cease to exist in any form?
Yahweh is not a sadist.
To backtrack briefly about what you were saying about how they like to loot our tax money, so basically the fruits of our labor, or basically our direct labor, goes to making weapons that will be destroyed in perpetual war. Thereby, we don't get to enjoy our labor since we're always producing more weapons that will always inevitably be destroyed in the perpetual conflict.
Right, basically.
So we're perpetually kept in debt.
And they perpetually have us enslaved. It's just a vicious cycle. And they keep people distracted and they keep people subjected through all of their wars, through all of their petty wars. And there will be wars and rumors of wars, and there you have it. We have not been out of war. We have not been out of war since the Civil War, maybe. I mean, for a little bit, but I mean, definitely not since the Spanish-American War have we been in peace for any significant time.
The Civil War really didn't end, though, in 1865. It continued on, since Reconstruction was just as bloody, if not bloodier, than the whole of the Civil War.
That's true. The War of Northern Aggression is what I should be calling it. Civil War is not the right. I mean, we're locked into that false term, but it's not a civil war. It's the war of aggression.
I only say civil war because most people wouldn't. Otherwise, they wouldn't know what I'm talking about, and that carries over even when I'm talking to people who would know what I'm talking about. And I pointed out to people that a classic civil war is where two or more factions vie for control of a central government, and they hope to become the government and replace the government. And I'm keen to point out that Robert E. Lee and Jefferson Davis and all of them, the Confederate leaders, they never aspired to march on D.C., throw out Lincoln, and become the new government of the United States of America. They were simply trying to safeguard and secure their own states and their own independence.
Well, right, and that's why it's not a civil war. That's why it's not it can't be really properly called a civil war.
It was a war of independence.
We've come to use the term because it's easy to spit out of your mouth, but it wasn't a civil. Yeah, you're right. A civil war is two parties competing for control of the same government. That's what a civil war is.
And that's what happened in Russia. Russia was a civil war.
Right. But the war in 1860 in the United States was not, the war between the states was not a civil war.
And I wouldn't even call it the war between the states. I would just call it the war of Southern independence, since the South declared their independence much the same fashion as the colonies declared their independence from George III. They declared their own independence, although unfortunately in their case they weren't able to secure their independence on the battlefield.
Right. You know, I'm really torn actually about the Civil War for this reason, because first, it's the Rothschilds that wanted to split the country. So when you look at it that way, you think, well, what Lincoln did was good. But when you look at it from a constitutional viewpoint, what Lincoln did was bad. When you look at it from a Christian viewpoint, what Lincoln did was bad. Because brother should never fight against brother. A white man should never fight against. Every effort should be made to avoid a conflict between white men.
I think that the entire war was unnecessary, and it could have been avoided, and it should have been avoided.
But when you look at it from the point of stopping the Rothschilds, then you think, well, the war was good. So it's easy to get in a quandary over that, which I refuse to get into. And perhaps the proper route would have been to educate people, but I mean, that never happens. That's never the viable option because people aren't easily educatable. If we were all educated in the first place, we wouldn't have these problems.
Also,
if we were educated about the Jews, we wouldn't have any of these problems.
Well, also, the same Jews that are agitating for the war and that want the war own the newspapers and they own all the means of dissemination of information, so there's really no way to educate the masses, while at the same time they're whipping the masses into a war frenzy.
Right. And they control both sides. So they win regardless of which side loses and wins.
That is most often the case, that's for sure. They haven't always controlled both sides. I mean, they didn't control both sides when they took down the Romanovs, and they didn't control both sides of Nazi Germany, and they definitely didn't control both sides in World War I with Kaiser Wilhelm, but they often do control both sides.
And they didn't control both sides in the American Revolution.
Probably not.
And it seems that in instances where they don't control both sides, they go out of their way. They do everything. They pull all the stops. They make sure the entire world is on their side, opposed to whoever they can't co-opt. That's why it basically took the entire world to bring down the Axis powers.
and that's another case of people not being educated, because we should have never been on the same side as Joseph Stalin in anything, for any reason. Nothing could ever justify that.
It's interesting that the communists, Roosevelt, Stalin, Churchill, who sold out their countries, traitors. All that, the Allied forces, they all lied. That's a good name for them.
Yeah, it is. It's very fitting.
I think we should be careful, though, about saying that Roosevelt sold out his country and that Churchill sold out his country, since both of them were Jews, and thus what they did against America and against Britain wouldn't be considered treason, since this is not...
That's correct. Well, they're just... Well,
was Churchill really a Jew?
Yes.
Has that been established? I mean, has that been substantiated?
His maternal grandmother was a Jew.
Oh, yeah? Okay, I never saw any substantiation for that. I'm just letting you know that. I've heard the allegation, but I've never saw the substantiation.
You know, I had my my truck towed down in Georgia once, and I got in a conversation with the driver. And he said, if you ain't white, you're a nigger. And but the way he said it was, that was about 6 months ago. That was the first time I ever encountered that, you know.
Les, you really got to go look at my Mein Kampf site and listen to the programs that Sword Brethren and I have been doing for the last month and a half on Sunday nights.
Oh, Bill.
Yes.
Here, Churchill's mother was Jenny Jerome. Her father was involved in theater investment and changed his name from Jacobson to Jerome. And here's a quote from Moshe Cohn in the Jerusalem Post, quote, "Cunning, no doubt, came to Churchill in the Jewish genes transmitted by his mother, Lady Randolph Churchill, maiden name Jacobson." And that's out of the Jerusalem Post. So that they've claimed him as one of their own.
Well, that's interesting, but they also claim Hitler as one of their own.
And that's
to throw people off the trail.
But Hitler's parents weren't named Jacobson, and they weren't involved in theater.
Well, right, but I'd still like to see independent verification. I'm a kind of pragmatic guy, and I'd like to see it in some sort of records.
All right. I will continue looking.
I just can't consider the Jerusalem Post an authority on anything. Why would they? They're Jews. Why would they ever tell the truth?
But the biographical information about the theater director and the name change, I found that elsewhere. But the quote from the Jerusalem Post, I haven't found that in too many places.
Well, what's always been interesting to me is that during the First World War, Franklin Roosevelt was the United States Secretary of the Navy, and Winston Churchill was the British Lord of the Admiralty or Minister of the Admiralty.
Yeah.
That they both had equivalent posts during the First World War.
You think there's something behind that?
Oh, yeah, that's too neat to be a coincidence. The Lusitania, come on, the whole, yeah, that was, that's way too neat to be a coincidence. There ain't no coincidences like that, I'm sorry.
And then later, the Reuben James and Pearl Harbor, it seems FDR knew quite a bit about the Navy.
Yeah, and he did know quite a bit about the Navy because he was the Secretary of the Navy in the First World War.
He was actually Assistant Secretary of the Navy.
Okay. Well, he worked for that department anyway. And he would have been intimately involved, I'm sure. And it's just, is it a coincidence that Roosevelt and Churchill had similar posts during that war? And that war was actually the justification of that war was in a naval operation, and they both end up being the leaders of their respective countries for the next big war against Germany? That's just too convenient. I'm sorry. There's something up with that. I always thought there was.
It's very odd that Churchill, too, being a army officer involved in, you know, basically infantry cavalry, would wind up the head of the admiralty. You know, I mean, they'd be like taking someone out of the infantry and making them commander of the Air Force.
Yeah, absolutely.
He was also president of the Board of Trade.
He was involved in the Boer War, too, Churchill. It wasn't a big involvement, and I think he was a coward, but he screwed something up. I can't quite remember what it was.
He was a prisoner of war. He got himself captured.
Did he?
Yes.
Well, if the Boers were anything as cruel as the English were, we wouldn't have had a Winston Churchill to be prime minister. What a shame those Boers are so civil.
The day after Churchill did get into office, they started bombing German civilian populations.
Ooh, yeah. Here, he was held in a prison camp in Pretoria.
Well, that's what the Jews don't tell us about World War II, that they call the Germans war criminals for bombing London, but they don't tell us that that was only a response to the British bombing of German civilian populations.
Absolutely. Prior to that, they were focusing exclusively on the airfields so as to destroy the RAF.
And that actually, you know, when the British decided to reciprocate by bombing, when the Germans decided to reciprocate by bombing British civilian positions rather than continuing to concentrate on the airfields, they actually helped the British war cause.
Hmm.
They actually hurt themselves by reciprocating.
Yeah, since the RAF was allowed to recover, whereas they were basically on the ropes. They were on the verge of total defeat.
And more people were the suffering of the German people in Dresden, more people were
Yeah, well, there's no doubt that Dresden is the beginning of the real Holocaust.
More than Nagasaki and Hiroshima combined, and there's not a peep about it.
No. Because the Jews only want us to know and bear in our conscience what us mean white people did to those poor Japanese civilians.
Mm-hmm. And the same thing about internment of Japanese. I've tried to tell people about the internment of Germans and Italians in this country, and I've been called a liar, despite the fact it's documented. They said that they've never heard about it before, and if it had happened, it would be in history books, they maintain. And I point out that the Japanese were released basically the day the war with Japan ended. Most of the Italians and Germans, about 20 or 30,000 of whom were held, weren't released until 1948 and sometimes 1949. Yet we don't even hear a peep for reparations demands.
Well, the things that we don't hear about, there's a lot of different media companies and a lot of different book publishers, right?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of different universities. And the things that we do not hear about, that we don't hear about from any of those sources, that proves there's a conspiracy. That itself proves there's a conspiracy.
So there is a
It proves
diversity.
That there is collusion.
Well, there's a variety of universities and a variety of media outlets, but there's no diversity in reporting. They all report the same trite.
Right. And it proves that there is collusion.
So I don't want to upset any soda fans, but it's like, you know, Dr. Pepper, Mountain Dew, Pepsi, and Coke, but is there really any real difference? It's just one design on a can and a different design on another can, and basically it's an identical product.
You know, if you go to the Internet.
I don't drink soda either. I don't drink soda because all those soda companies, they take their money and they give it to those niggers for endorsements.
Absolutely. And
so
I don't drink soda. Primarily for health reasons.
High fructose corn syrup, too.
Oh, yeah, soda's it's a disgusting product in the first place.
Probably got dick pus in it.
You know, if you go to the Internet and you look up CNN and the other news outlets, you will see a lot of times the same news article with the same spin on all of the networks, which shows collusion in itself.
Hmm. It's no doubt that there's massive collusion in America, academia, and the American media. But the average person is never going to see it because they don't investigate. They simply don't ask questions. They don't investigate. They don't. It's amazing.
Well, that would take away from football, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah, that too. From the Super Bowl.
Hey, Bill, you think that when the Jews when the Jews faked that moon landing, when they what they called Apollo on or whatever, you think that was like a way of getting everybody to look up to his name like that?
You know, I don't know. I really don't. I don't like to comment on things that I really don't know or know very little about, and that's one of them.
Funny you should mention the moon landing, since earlier I came across a YouTube video. It's a poem/song by some nig, Jill Scott Ron, it looks like, and he's bellyaching about Whitey on the moon. Have you heard this one before, Bill or Gerald?
No, I haven't.
You want me to go ahead and read it? It's pretty funny.
Go ahead, yeah.
He wrote this in 1969. A rat done bit my sister Nell with Whitey on the moon. Her face and arms began to swell, and Whitey's on the moon. I can't pay no doctor bill, but Whitey's on the moon. 10 years from now, I'll be paying still while Whitey's on the moon. The man just upped my rent last night because Whitey's on the moon. No hot water, no toilets, no lights, but Whitey's on the moon. I wonder why he's upping me because Whitey's on the moon. I was already paying him 50 a week with Whitey on the moon. Taxes taking my whole damn check. Junkies making me a nervous wreck. The price of food is going up. And as if all that shit, pardon the language, wasn't enough, a rat done bit my sister Nell with Whitey on the moon. Her face
Hold
and arms. And
I don't believe this poem because the nigger works.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, but it gets better. It's funny. Her face and arm began to swell, but Whitey's on the moon. With all that money I made last year for Whitey on the moon, how come there ain't no money here? Whitey's on the moon. You know, I just about had my fill of Whitey on the moon. I think I'll send these doctor bills, Airmare Special, to Whitey on the moon. Now, when is a nig ever paid a bill he's owed?
I can't remember. I don't know.
Maybe they were different back then, or would it just be that they would send a bill to the county office and tell them pay for my medical treatment?
I'm sure there might be a couple of Negroes out there that really do want to do the right thing and pay their bills, but it doesn't last. It doesn't last because their brother niggers just convinced them that they're acting like Uncle Tom's if they pay their bills and they can't do that anymore. So that's my impression of them. And that's an honest impression, too.
Absolutely.
Well, the reason I mentioned that Apollo, the fake moon landings, is they lied about saying three people each time, six times. And they called it Apollo, Apollo. I think that was one of the, if you can accept the conspiracy of gas chambers and, I don't know why people don't, just, it doesn't take but 15 minutes to figure out we never went there.
Yeah, you know, I have never done the homework to do that, so I don't want to comment on it. That's all. I'm not. I've heard some of the arguments from the skeptics, and a lot of them make good sense, but I've never done the homework. And because of that, I don't like to run my mouth. I'm sorry. That's just the way it is.
Well, I'm not forcing anything. But it was interesting that it happened right there in the beatnik Jewish hippie.
Well, you can talk about it. I mean, you're more than willing, Bruce, to talk about it all you want, believe me.
But what I'm saying is it had an impact on you know, it was right during the middle of another Jew war. And obviously it got people's minds off of that. But
yeah,
it was
another distraction.
Interestingly enough, the government of Kenya and Uganda are talking about teaming up since they say it's time for Africa to go to the moon and they want to put Africans on the moon.
We should put them all on the moon.
Yeah.
I'm all for that.
That's what my mother's father said. He said, ship the coon to the moon. Or no, he said, trigger the nigger, put the coon on the moon, and when he gets there, you can say the jig is up.
The last time they sent a Jew to heaven, he blew up over Texas, didn't he? Isn't that what happened a couple of years ago?
Yeah.
But, you know, if there is going to be an African space program, they're going to have to bring in white people to run it. We're going to have to provide the shuttle and everything. If they have any hand in it, they probably won't even be able to get beyond stage one, let alone find a craft to taxi it out to the launching pad. And I said to my dad, you think that the Negro space program would explode on the launching pad? And he said, how do they get to the launching pad? That's what he wanted to know.
You know, for 50,000 years, they sat on the shore of that continent, and they never built a canoe.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to build a spaceship.
I forget what author it was that wrote it, but he said that for thousands of years, the Negro crushed under his feet diamonds. He trampled upon gold. He never once built a tool that lasted for more than one use. He never saw fit to build a canoe to cross a river. He never saw fit to domesticate a single animal. He spent centuries, millennia, staring out at the waves, and he never dared to dream of what might lie beyond them.
And that's exactly true.
He has no creative spark. And we know why, because Yahweh didn't breathe it into him.
Well, how could you breathe a creative spark into a beast in the first place? I mean,
absolutely.
The existence of the Negro It is in opposition to the creation of God.
Mm-hmm. But can you imagine that just sitting there for thousands of years, and every day you look at a river, and that's the boundary of your exploration because you come to a river and you say, well, I must turn back and go back. Then you come to another river and you just settle in between two rivers and you never go anywhere because it never enters your mind to build something or to fashion a bridge, perhaps out of logs or trees that have fallen over, and bridge the darn river. I mean, Caesar bridged the Rhine in 6 days. Maybe it was 7 days, but there were tens of thousands of Gauls and Germans all around him ready to kill him and his soldiers, and he built a bridge in less than a week.
That is a pretty amazing story, too. I read that story in De Bello Gallico, the Gallic
mm-hmm.
Wars, and that was a pretty amazing story.
And yet today I see construction companies that can't repair a bridge in a 3-year period. They're working on the Interbelt Bridge in Cleveland. They've been working on it for 4 or 5 years now, and they're having to shut it down periodically. You would have to wonder why, with modern technology, modern construction techniques, can't they repair a bridge that's not over a river and not during a wartime with enemies all around them?
Well, back then, you know, the Romans didn't, the Italians, they didn't have any labor unions. They weren't labor bosses yet. They didn't have strikes. Caesar wouldn't put up with that shit.
And they didn't practice affirmative action.
Yeah, well, that too.
You know, ants can, they can cross a stream, and sometimes they even clasp each other's legs and hold on and build a bridge for other ants to cross over. They get in leaves and use them as boats. So what does that say about the intelligence of a nigger?
Well, I would have to wonder why it never occurred to some nigger to see a tree falls down over a stream and animals cross it. So he realizes, oh, I can cross that. And then it enters his mind that, oh, if we knock down more trees, we can fashion them together and make a bridge.
Well, the sad point, and I argue this all the time, and I actually get further with this than I do everything with anything else, once I get somebody to listen to me long enough, it is to demonstrate from history which peoples have built cultures and which people have never built cultures. And the sad part is that more white men don't ask those questions. Why have they never built a culture? why have they never codified laws or created an alphabet or symphony music or a million? There's a million examples of things that they've never done. And what makes you think that because they live here, they will be able to do those things?
If they would have been able to do these things, they would have done them 10,000 years ago on their own.
Right. They can't do anything on their own. And they can only do it with – they can only even dream about doing it when they have a substantial amount of our blood and are within the bounds of our culture.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, they're almost always a destructive force.
In their attempts
to
mimic
– they're always a destructive force.
Their attempts to mimic us are pathetic at best and outright dangerous at worst.
And that's, you know, the destruction of our culture is absolutely evident, but more white people don't. I don't know how they don't see it. I mean, anybody that's ever read any kind of history book should understand it. It's an enigma to me.
Observation should prove it.
Right. Simple observation.
Well, there is one thing we should credit them with. It's the so-called civilization of Great Zimbabwe. Have you heard of Great Zimbabwe, Bill?
No, I haven't heard of Great Zimbabwe.
I had to do a report on this in world history class in 10th grade, so I had to study up on this, and it took me about half an hour to digest all the information since there was such a wealth of it. They had about 30,000 to 50,000 Negroes in the 16th century in Zimbabwe, modern Zimbabwe anyway, living around a 33 to 35-foot tall stone tower that they believe was built with the help of Arab traders that sailed down from Zanzibar and explored the area and enslaved some of them and then taught them a few things and then left. They managed to cultivate a few crops, again, they believe with the help of Arab explorers that sailed down from Zanzibar. They built a small wall around this little village where they had 30 to 50,000 people living. And they lasted until 300 Portuguese with 16th century firearms came and conquered all of them. And that was the story of Great Zimbabwe. They call it Great Zimbabwe, but I would call it maybe Mediocre Zimbabwe.
Pretty funny.
Although I suppose it was better than modern Zimbabwe.
Well, you know, modern Zimbabwe was a huge exporter of grain.
Rhodesia.
Zimbabwe. Was a huge exporter of grain 10 years ago until Mugabe or whatever the hell his name is decided to throw all the white farmers off their farms.
Mm-hmm.
They were exporting grain. They were the largest grain exporter in Africa 10 years ago.
But such
now, they went from being the largest grain exporters in Africa to having to import grain in order to feed themselves.
Well, the McDonald's is in Zimbabwe now serve rat meat. Did you know that?
Wow. Well, in their cultural context, that's fine. Why wouldn't it be? You don't eat rat meat?
They're also eating grain. They also eat grass.
If we ate grass, our stomachs wouldn't be able to handle it. We'd be sick.
And there was one black man I saw in a video. He was sitting in front of I think it was a barrel, and he had a fire going in it, and he was crying. He said that he wants the white people to come back, and he wants them to run the country again.
I would like to know what kind of physiological differences they have from us that enable them to eat grass, if that's so. Because I'm pretty sure the real human stomach is not capable of processing grass.
Well, I know for a fact that the leadership...
I might be wrong, but...
The leadership in North Korea went on the TV and discussed various ways to cook up grass, and they told all the peasants to eat grass, right?
Grass. But the Africans don't cook.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, maybe they do. Maybe they use dung for fuel.
Sometimes they eat the dung.
I thought they built their homes out of it.
Usually mud. Or thatch. Although a lot of them live in shanty towns, basically just discarded shipping containers, houses that look like just stacks of aluminum cans. It's rather comical.
It's more modern than mud. They eat each other. Yeah, they eat each other, too. They do that. Well, where do we go from here? It's only 11:45.
We could talk about the conspiracies at work in the Austro-Hungarian Empire involving Crown Prince Rudolph, since I happen to have pages up on that.
Well, then you know a lot more about it than I do, because it's not my period. I'm sorry.
Okay.
If you wanted to talk about the Peloponnesian Wars or Pericles or Timaeus, I'm all ready to go.
All right. Well, quick question. When somebody asked me once, can you name a war the Jews weren't behind? And I said, give me a minute. And then I said, maybe the Punic Wars, big maybe, and maybe the Peloponnesian War, and that's again a maybe. And I said, if you're going to find a war the Jews weren't behind, you're going to have to go back to antiquity. Now,
there was the Phoenicians of Carthage were mostly white and mostly Israelites. But I would not doubt if there were some Canaanites among them. And I'm sure there were. And Rome was mostly white and mostly Israelite, Japhethite, but I would not doubt that there weren't some Canaanites among them.
But does that mean that they were in positions to agitate for war and actually get a war going?
Well, as merchants, as traders, as behind-the-scenes politicians, like they always have been in history, I don't expect it was any different back then. I'm being honest. And no, it's not recorded. It's nothing that you can find in history books. In Athens, political parties had to be banned. They banned political parties in Athens. You could not have a political party. It was punishable by death at certain times. Because they knew that political parties were all about trouble. That's everybody, you know, the Jew media loves to compare the American democracy to the great democracy at Athens. And the Jew-run French revolutionists did the same thing. That they made the comparison first, I think. But our democracy or our republic is nothing like the democracy of Athens. The democracy of Athens was actually far superior. But the Jew bought his way onto the rolls there. There's no doubt.
By modern definition, democracy is mob rule.
Right, absolutely. And that was, you know, it was understood as basically mob rule in Athens. But there was no the political parties were banned.
I wrote a post on this on a so-called conservative forum on this theory or along the similar lines. Would you let me go ahead and just read a bit of that now about democracy being mob rule?
Sure. It is my rule.
Before you start reading, I need to leave, so I'm going to wish everyone Yahweh bless, and prayerfully I'll see y'all tomorrow on the show that I'm hosting.
Okay.
All right. Yahweh bless.
Yahweh bless.
Democracy, by definition, is mob rule. Mobs themselves are ruled by those who guide and direct them, those who cause them to form. Mobs don't form in a spontaneous fashion. There is no such thing as a spontaneous popular uprising or a sudden and uncoordinated riot. America is ruled by those who guide the mobs because we have gone from a nation that had strict voting requirements and an expectation of appreciation and knowledge of American history and culture, as well as having some tangible stake in the land, to one where virtually anybody can vote. Anything that has two legs and a pulse, sometimes even this is overlooked, is permitted to vote, regardless of whether it even speaks our language or knows who the first three presidents of the nation were. Likewise, it is entirely possible and indeed happens every election for dual citizens, such as those in Israel, who haven't set foot in this nation in many years, to cast absentee ballots and influence our elections. Short of being in the armed forces or being on an extended vacation or business trip, if you haven't physically resided in the United States at all in the year prior to the election, you shouldn't be allowed to vote in the election. Dual citizens are free to vote in all the elections of the other nation that they apparently love enough to maintain residence in instead of America where they don't want to reside. It doesn't matter if you're a child-killing pedophile, an illegal alien, a former communist with the SLA from the 1970s who blew up police cars. You can rest assured that the ACLU and various other communist front organizations are working tirelessly to assure that your right to vote is not denied. America doesn't resemble America anymore, because America isn't America anymore. There's no sense in denying it. It's the truth. America will soon go the way of Canada, Yugoslavia, Lebanon, the Soviet Union, France, or Great Britain. That is to say, in the case of some of those nations, they imploded and fragmented. In other nations, they were plunged into civil war at Lebanon. And in others, they are making increasing concessions to large segments of the populations, powerful minority groups, because there is no longer any common heritage or culture upon which laws can be based and formed. Some of you may know that as recent as the mid-1970s, Lebanon was about 90% Christian, and Beirut was regarded as the Paris of the Middle East, and demographically, Lebanon was a nation apart from its neighbors. They felt sorry for various Islamic refugees who were fleeing either their own oppressive dictatorial regimes or who were fleeing from the incessant wars fought between their nations and Israel. By the early 1980s, Lebanon was at least 40 to 50% Islamic.
Let me say one thing. Was Lebanon the Paris of the Middle East because of the Lebanese or because of the many French settlers and all the French money pouring into there?
Of course.
All right, so we can't always. I don't think a lot of these comparisons are fair, but that's okay. Go on.
By the early 1980s, Lebanon was at least 40 to 50% Islamic, the primary demographic for the Muslims being Arab, and it was in a full-scale civil war. In the name of multiculturalism and tolerance, Canada allows Sikh students, that's S-I-K-H, to take their ceremonial daggers and swords to school with them. Yeah, Sikhs.
Yeah, they're from India, from northern India.
In the name of multiculturalism and tolerance, Great Britain is now allowing Sharia courts to be utilized for marriage, divorce, custody, and civil issues between Muslims. I could go on and on. The basic point is that we in America have no common culture heritage upon which we can draw from to make our laws because we have no common people. America in its present form is simply a modern incarnation of the Roman Empire shortly before it fell. Mainly, we are overextended, broke, hated throughout the world, identified as weak and ripe for the plucking, and packed with people from across the world who have nothing in common with our forefathers and who have seriously questionable loyalty to the Constitution and the founding principles of this nation. On the international scene, America is likely going to be humbled in a major way by some of the other great powers or aspiring great powers in the world. The main threat to America has always been from Asia. That is to say, the main existential threat to the continuity of the American Republic is from Asia.
And that's another thing. Asia would never be a threat if we didn't ship all our, if the Jews didn't ship all of our technology over there.
And then
Asia
I go on.
Would never be able to threaten us. Go on, I'm sorry.
That's right. We have had other threats from other regions, but we were never living under the threat of military conquest by Brazil or Mexico. While the threat of military conquest combined with some form of demographic colonization has been an ever-present threat in regards to Japan and China, we are going to be humbled, if not militarily, then diplomatically and economically, and probably in a massive way, a way that will shock the world, at least those who haven't been paying attention for the last two decades. At this point in our history, it is inevitable that we are going to go the way of the Roman Empire, Austria-Hungary, the Soviet Union, Yugoslavia, etc., if for no other reason than for economic reasons. The cultural, religious, lingual, demographic aspect is just another nail in the coffin. Heterogeneous nations are inherently unstable. Any serious historian who is honest will tell you this. This is one of the main reasons that empires are met with mounting resistance by the various subject peoples and then ultimately weaken and fall. There is no common heritage or culture upon which laws can be based. America is presently as weak as it is because, like Rome, we have gone from a mostly homogeneous republic to an absolutely heterogeneous empire. Thus, we are experiencing all the problems associated with being a heterogeneous empire because that is what we are.
Right. Well, every empire devolves into a tyranny and then it falls apart. Every single empire, every single great nation that became an empire, that's the pattern it followed. There's no avoiding it. And that's only a surface knowledge of history to arrive at that conclusion. And it's not only what happened to Rome, it's what happened to Egypt, it's what happened to Assyria, it's what happened to Babylon, it's what happened to Persia, it happened to every one of them.
Absolutely. And the point about Lebanon, though, Lebanon began to change around the time of the Crusades, and I would say that the last white element is now gone in Lebanon, and it probably happened in the last 100 years, but there were some white holdouts in Lebanon. Lebanon was basically the last bastion of the white race in the Middle East.
Well, I would be skeptical over how white they really were.
But I'm talking about the influx of French beginning with the Crusades, and then again when it became a French colonial possession, how the French basically swarmed in there.
There may have been a great influx of white French people when it became a French colonial possession, but that is what made it the Paris of the Middle East.
Oh, absolutely.
The Lebanese, sure as hell, didn't do a damn thing to bring any high degree of culture there to their own land.
Well, I would say that Lebanon is basically a French possession. So when I say Lebanese, typically in that time period, I'm referring to the ethnic French living in their colony, Lebanon. The modern Lebanese are all just Arab invaders that took over what used to be the white man's land.
Okay, but it's just easy to think that you're talking about the native Lebanese.
Mm. Although even still, the religious issue still applies, since the Arab Christians, so-called, allowed in the Arab Muslims, and the Muslims killed them. So even in regards to religion, you can't extend hospitality to somebody of a different faith, because once they outnumber you, they'll kill you.
Absolutely. And especially Muslims. I mean, that's that their belief, their book tells them to convert people by the sword. You convert or you die.
Not only tells them, it commands them.
Right. And that's, you know, if Christians don't believe their holy book, they shouldn't expect that Muslims don't. Because as many of those Muslims actually do read the Quran, and they actually do believe it, and they actually do seek to be obedient to it.
Most Muslims seem to take Islam seriously, or at least certain aspects of it, particularly the ones that talk about kill the infidel and take all of his women.
Yeah, well, just like the Greeks at the time of Christ, the Greeks at the time of Christ did not take their own religion seriously.
I saw a video, I think it was in Denmark, during the protests of that cartoon, there was a Muslim shouting, "Let us kill them all and take their wives as war booty." Yet they allow these creeps into the West.
Right, and that's exactly what's on all of their minds. But the Jew loves it. The Jew loves to see it's being destroyed.
The Western man, through parliamentarian democracy, has sown the seeds of his own demise. The Jew loves parliamentarian democracy, doesn't he?
That is, yes, he does, but that is because, and that actually has roots in Babylon also, that is because the Western man refused to make distinctions on racial grounds.
Mm-hmm. Geography is absolutely unimportant when it comes to citizenship issues and kinship issues.
And we fall right into the trap of geographical allegiances every time. And it's as old as the Bible.
And I even have family members who have fallen into that. My mother's father, he'll rant about the Jews and the blacks. And I asked him, you know, to discuss who he's voted for over the years. And I asked him, "Did you vote for Thurman?" And he says, "No, you can't trust a Southerner. They'll break away and take half the country with them." So he didn't vote for him. And then I asked him if he voted for Wallace. And he said that Wallace would have socked it to the niggers, but he wasn't going to vote for a Southerner.
There you have it. That's the sad state of I can't even say it's not a recent, you know, it's as old as the Bible. I pointed that out the other night. It's as old as the time when the children of Benjamin almost got wiped out because they stuck up for the sons of Belial, who were
and
mixed race.
Sparta versus Athens.
Well, you know, a lot of people don't understand that they were actually tribal wars. They weren't wars over forms of government, as the Jews would like us to believe. And that's actually what's taught in academia, but it's wrong. You see, the Spartans were Dorian Greeks, and they preferred oligarchy. And the Athenians were Ionian Greeks, and they preferred the Athenian democracy. And they would all convert, force their allies and their subject states to use their form of government. But the bottom line is that the quarrels were tribal.
It makes sense that different cultures come from different races / different tribes.
Absolutely. And the Athenian, let me talk about the Athenian democracy was not democracy as we know it. When I say Athenian democracy, I'm really not talking about the blatant base mob rule that we know that democracy has devolved into in this nation. Athenian democracy outlawed parties, and only the males who were of a certain age, 20, of the founding families of Athens, which was originally 5,000 founding families, were allowed to vote, ever. However, and Thucydides complained about this, about 3,000 families over several centuries had actually bought their way onto the voting rolls.
Hmm.
I wonder who they were. The ecclesia in Athens was actually the males eligible to vote whose families were on the voting rolls. They were considered the ecclesia. They are the only people in Athens who voted, who were allowed to vote. Nobody else. Women could never vote. And people that moved into Athens who failed to or never tried or weren't wealthy enough to buy their way onto the voting rolls surreptitiously, because that was all done surreptitiously, that they could never vote. You could never become an Athenian citizen. They had no concept of aliens, even white aliens, moving in and just becoming citizens, or children being born there of alien families and becoming citizens. The Greeks had no concept of that at all. America probably would have lasted longer if we really did model ourselves after the democracy of Athens. Because the democracy of Athens, it did last 500 years. It wore itself into the ground through wars with the Spartans and other of their neighbors. But
today, though, it's, as I said, any creature with a pulse and two legs is allowed to vote. And sometimes the requirements aren't even that strict.
And that's sad. And the founders of this country actually left it up to the states for each state to determine what its criteria were for voters. And of course the Jews polluted that system too. But it was originally in the Constitution, it's left up to the states. And just as in the Constitution, it's left up to the states as to who would be a citizen of what state. There is no citizen of the United States in our Constitution. Because we're all citizens of the various states where we hold our citizenship. And the Constitution left it up to the various states to determine how they would determine citizenship.
But now the Supreme Court says that any creature born here is a citizen.
Right, that's under the 14th Amendment, which is absolutely unconstitutional. It's against the spirit that the Constitution was written in.
And it's
absolutely
a misinterpretation, too, isn't it? Since not everybody – essentially, I think what the 14th Amendment is trying to say or ought to say in keeping with the spirit is that if you are born here to two citizens, you are a citizen. But if an illegal simply craps you out after crossing the border, that doesn't mean that you're a citizen and therefore we can't deport them, because then you'd be alone in this country. How sad.
Right, but it's never been read that way. It's never been read that way. Because the oligarchs have controlled the courts. I should call them plutocrats that have controlled the courts for who knows how long.
And I've seen some sob stories on MSNBC that talk about how illegal children are left in limbo when their parents are deported and they have nowhere to go, and they can either stay here, and most of them opt to, or they can return with their parents, and they're trying to lobby for immigration reform so their parents can stay here and they don't have to be separated from their children.
Of course they are, but that's the bleeding heart media pulling the heartstrings of the liberal and female voters. And,
well,
and most, most women, I don't want to, it's just a fact that most women cave into that mentality.
Emotion should not be allowed to cloud a debate, and if people are that concerned about family reunification, the family can reunite in Honduras.
Absolutely. But, you know, that's it's always the Jewish liberal argument that's going to carry the media and eventually the public opinion.
But they're not even really responsive to public opinion one way or the other, are they? They simply point to it when it seems to reinforce what they want to do, or when they've manipulated it to portray it in such a way that it seems to manipulate it. I'm sorry, that it seems to reinforce what they want to do because they've manipulated it that way.
Well, you know something? The bottom line is that it really doesn't matter anyway. Let them all come here.
Who was it that...
Because Yahweh's going to destroy them all.
I forget which Jew it was that said the public be damned.
Yeah, I do remember that quote, but I can't remember who it was.
Wasn't it Cornelius Vanderbilt or Martin Vanderbilt?
I have no idea. I'm sure you could probably find it on Google pretty quickly.
Yes, it was him.
He was a yellow journalist. The Vanderbilts were yellow journalists, I believe.
8 October 1882, he said the public be damned when somebody said that the public was upset by his ending a popular train service and that a lot of people relied upon it and they needed it.
Railroad tycoon, that's right. I'm thinking about somebody else. Who was that Go West young man?
That wasn't William Randolph Hearst, was it?
No, Cyrus something. I don't
know. Horace Greeley.
Yeah, that's it, Horace Greeley. Okay, I am confused with them.
Was Horace Greeley a Jew, or was he just a yellow journalist?
I would like to think that he probably was not a Jew, and he was probably just a capitalizing yellow journalist.
But now,
but
William did
beat the drum for that Spanish-American War with all fervor.
Horace Greeley was dead in 1872.
Then who am I thinking about? I don't know. I get all confused with
that. William Randolph Hearst?
No, there was another one, I think. I don't think it was Hearst. I mean, Hearst was a yellow journalist, too, and he was an imperialist also.
Hearst was the you provide the pictures, I'll provide the war.
He was pro-Spanish-American War, which is what I consider an imperialist at that time. I don't read enough about the period.
It wouldn't have been Pulitzer, would it?
No, and he was a Jew, too. Joseph Pulitzer. What a mess that family was.
It wasn't Creelman, was it? Here's a picture I found.
It'll come to me half an hour after I hang up.
From 1898, they claim that Spaniards search women on American steamers, and it shows Spanish authorities strip searching an American tourist in Cuba. This was a front page picture. That's obscene.
You know, I had a Cuban once, and I told him how the United States possessed Cuba from the 1890s until 1945, and he said, "You lie." I'm like, "What do you mean I'm lying? We beat you in the Spanish-American War. Teddy Roosevelt charged up San Juan Hill. We had you for 45 years, and we got rid of you because we didn't want to hold on to you." And he said, "You lie." He was actually schooled in Castro's Cuba, and he came over here as a Marielito in the 1970s. Yeah, you know, one of the Jimmy Carter boat people. And he was pure scum. But he graduated high school in Cuba. And he never learned that anything about the Spanish-American War or about the United States possession of Cuba and granting of Cuban independence in the 40s.
You would think that would be important, particularly from the anti-American bent that they're always on, that they would say that the imperialist Yankees invaded and occupied us for five decades.
Well, right, but that was totally wiped out of the school books in Cuba.
Hmm. It's not even a footnote.
No, you know, the parochial and high school books anyway. He knew nothing about it. And he totally disbelieved me until I got an American-raised Cuban to straighten him out.
I'm looking at Pulitzer's The World, Maine explosion caused by bomb or torpedo, and then it shows the Maine blowing up in a brilliant just conflagration, basically.
The biggest example of the power, the best example today in the world of the power of propaganda is probably in Macedonia, I think. In Macedonia, you have a whole generation of Slavs. They're racially Slavs, and the Soviet school system educated them to believe that they were the people that produced the Macedonian culture of Alexander the Great.
That's a lie.
Yes, it's a lie. Of course it's a lie. But that's why we have a Slavic Macedonia today, because the Soviets had ensured that these people learned this in the school system. And the government ended up appealing to the United Nations to use the name Macedonia, and the Greeks are crying and up in arms about it because the Slavs have actually stolen a big chunk of their heritage. It's actually funny. It's comical. But that's actually going on in the world today, and that's a great example of the power of propaganda. There is no way you could look at history and make the determination that Alexander the Great was a Slav. It's ridiculous. But it shows you just how screwed up the world really is. It's apparent to me anyway. And it's a real world example of the power of propaganda. And what people are willing to believe, and that they want to believe what they'd like to believe.
I would say that the Macedonians certainly are Slavic people, aren't they? The one Macedonian I ever met, though, she looked like a Nordic, blonde hair, blue eyes and all.
Well, she may have been a Greek Macedonian. But the current inhabitants of historic Macedonia are definitely Slavs.
You think there's a Nordic remnant left there?
Well, that's a possibility. But they're Slavic people.
I'm reading I came across a site here. I just typed in Macedonians, and it says, Macedonian women are among the best dates in the entire world. If you are lucky enough to land a date with one of these women, you are in for the night of your life. And then it talks about how you'll most certainly get some. It says that Macedonian women are party animals, and they like nothing more than to go out and let their hair down.
I don't think you're really picking the best choices on the Google search there.
It's what came up. I'll just type in Macedonian racial origins. That'll probably yield better. These people are Slavs. They say famous Macedonians, but there's nothing Macedonian about any of these people.
Well, that's my point.
But their names aren't even Macedonian.
No, they're Slavs.
Katerina Ivanovska. That's not a Greek name.
But the Soviet propaganda program decided to teach these people that they were Macedonians. So they petitioned the United Nations, because Greece tried to stop it. Greece tried to stop them from using the name because they're Slavs. They don't have any Macedonian heritage.
Well, here's what your Wikipedia says. The ancestry of present-day Macedonians is mixed. Their linguistic and cultural origins stem from the 6th century when various Slavic tribes migrated to and settled in Southeast Europe, including the region of Macedonia. Some early 20th century researchers, such as William Z. Ripley and Carlton Kuhn and Berto Lundman,
described the Slavic speakers in Macedonia as Bulgarians and often placed both populations in a common racial subgroup.
Hmm. Well, the Greeks, I mean, there are some Greeks that are white, and they're Greeks, and there are some Greeks that are Turks, too. And they might be able to be classed with the Bulgarians, but there are a lot of white Greeks that shouldn't be classed with the Bulgarians at all. I'm sorry.
Absolutely. The Bulgarians, basically, as a race, should not be considered white, should they?
No. No, they're a Mongol race. They're a mixed race.
The same largely goes for Romania and Hungary as well. Would you agree?
Absolutely.
I'm looking at Macedonian. Here's a picture of Macedonian girls in traditional dress. This all looks like it's something out of the Caucasus Mountains. They all look like Azerbaijanis, Georgians, and Armenians.
Well, they're more closely related to them than they are the they're not even properly Slavs. I mean, the Bulgars and the that they speak Slavic, but they're not even really properly Slavs. It's not even really right to consider them Slavs, but they're Slavic. They're considered Slavic because of their Slavic tongue. And they're part Slavic blood. But true Slavs would be white.
Absolutely. It's just that these people look like they came right out of the Caucasus Mountains. They're wearing exactly what you would expect to see, say, a Chechen wearing.
Well, welcome to the world of Soviet race mixing.
Just what Madison Grant said, one of my favorite quotes. Can I go ahead and read it?
Sure.
The progress of civilization becomes evident only when immense periods are studied and compared, but the lesson is always the same, namely that race is everything. Without race, there can be nothing except the slave wearing his master's clothes, stealing his master's proud name, adopting his master's tongue, and living in the crumbling ruins of his master's palace. Everywhere on the site of ancient civilizations, the Turk, the Kurd, and the Bedouin camp, and Americans might well pause and consider the fate of this country which they, and they alone, founded and nourished with their blood. The immigrant ditch diggers and the railroad navvies were to our fathers what their slaves were to the Romans, and the same transfer of political power from master to slave is taking place today. That's page 100, The Passing of the Great Race.
Hmm. Yeah,
well. That seems to be what happened in Macedonia. They're wearing our clothing. They've taken our names. They're speaking our language. But they're not us. And, in fact, in the case of the Macedonians, they're not even wearing our clothing. They're wearing something that would be more at home on a Turk or a Chechen.
And you can't tell those people they're not Macedonians. I mean, they're not, but you can't tell them they're not. They actually sincerely believe that it was their stock from which sprung Alexander, that they've been there forever.
Alexander was a Nordic Greek. These people didn't arrive until 200 years after Rome fell.
Well, right, but that's not what the Soviet school system decided to teach these people. And that's my point, is the power of propaganda to actually change somebody's perception of their identity.
Absolutely. Well, the Soviet national anthem also had the words, "The great Soviet Union shall last for the ages." Shall live through the ages, and we see how well that worked out. And they also said that.
Well, it worked out pretty good because it's in America.
And they thought that Marxist economics would be a great lift. You know, Mao had his great leap forward. The Soviets had their five-year plans, and it just wound up basically being a negative five-year plan and a great leap backwards. But that didn't stop them. You know, they never let the truth get in the way.
Well, I sincerely believe the wall came down not because the Soviets realized that we were right, but because we got enough like the Soviets that the wall could come down.
The wall was superfluous at that point.
Right.
They no longer needed it.
Right, because we've been conquered by Judaism. And if we weren't conquered by Judaism, we would have had a war with the Russians. The Cold War would have come to fruition. But we caved in the sexual revolution, and they beat us in the feminist revolution, and they beat us in the civil rights revolution. And because we caved in all those revolutions, there was no need for the Jews to bring the Soviets to war against us. That's my belief anyway.
But the threat was always there since the Soviet Union was built up so they could basically have a big stick with which to wave at the Western nations and say, capitulate, and if you don't capitulate, the Soviet Union is going to come after you and enforce it.
Well, they didn't phrase it in quite those terms, but the threat disappeared when the sexual revolution, the civil rights revolutions, and the feminist revolutions were all done and over with.
By the end of the 60s into the 70s, the threat of World War III was gone.
In all appearances, it was gone, yes.
But if the U.S., let's say Thurmond had won in 48 or Wallace had won when he made one of his three runs, we probably would have had an attack from the Soviet Union, wouldn't we?
I believe so. I believe that if America had resisted the cultural revolutions that the Jews brought here, that we would have had a war with a major problem. And the Soviet Union is the obvious one.
If we had elected...
At that time. Now, of course, it looks like China is more obvious, but I don't think anybody in this country would revolt against that if they just marched across the border. If they flew here on American Airlines or something, nobody would resist them.
That's what I've speculated, that they're going to simply come out of cargo containers and civilian airliners. They're going to basically use Trojan horses, and they're just going to take over everything, all key infrastructure, in one quick move.
They could have it. I mean, they own it anyway. Let them have it. Yeah, crush them all.
I found a picture here of a communist Macedonian leader. His name is Lazar Kolosevsky. He's identified as a Yugoslav communist and a Macedonian atheist. His name, mind you, is Lazar Kolosevsky.
Yeah, he's a Jew. There's no doubt.
He's not Macedonian. He's not Yugoslavian. He's not Slavic. He's not white.
None of the above.
Okay,
I think I'm going to call it a night. It's 12:30 and it's getting late.
One final thing, though. Since his family were poor farmers, that wouldn't mesh well with him being a Jew. I wonder if that just means that they were owners of a farm and it wasn't profitable.
I never knew a non-Jew with the name Lazar. I mean, I suppose it might happen, but I don't know. I never met one.
All right. Well, I think we had a pretty
good... Every Lazar I ever read about was a Jew. I don't know if there is a non-Jewish Lazar. Everyone I ever read about was a Jew. I guess they could be, but it's kind of like having a non-Jewish Hiram Rosenberg.
Like the president of Revolutionary Mexico, Lazaro Cardenas.
Yeah.
But anyway,
okay.
I think we had a pretty good chit-chat.
I'm going to call it a night. Thanks, everybody, for putting up with our musings. And Yahweh bless, and we'll see you tomorrow on Crystal Aeos.
Yahweh bless.
With Gerald Mosley. Take care. Bless y'all.